17 years ago, boys and girls, when I went into the movie business, I made up my mind that it should be run like a business, as a business, and that's what I've been trying to do.
Justin Souther, film critic with the Mountain Express.
And I'm Ken Hankey, the other film critic with the Mountain Express. And we are...
Elitist Bastards.
And we have been to the movies. And here we are once again in the cinema lounge of the Carolina Asheville.
On Hendersonville Road.
On Hendersonville Road, yes. And I guess we're ready to give you our impression of things we've seen and things we've yet to see.
Yeah, well, speaking of the cinema lounge, there's about, what, 15 feet away?
Oh, I'd make it 20.
Yeah,
but you know,
there's a Pac-Man machine, so.
And I could be wrong, but I think that's Galaga he's playing.
That's true.
It sounds more explosive.
It's one of
Pac-Man.
Those,
yeah.
Okay, so the big release this week, which
I still haven't seen, and I guess I ought to, since everybody says how wonderful it is. Well, you don't say how wonderful it is, but you say it's good.
It's Toy Story 3, which, when I say it's good, I say it's Toy Story. It's a Toy Story movie. It's exactly what you expect from Toy Story. It's pretty much the first two films, again. This isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's not a very exciting one.
It doesn't set my toes to tapping with delight, but no.
They're much quainter films than what Pixar has been coming out with lately. They touch on adult stuff, but they're less, I want to say adult-oriented, that's not the right word, but less.
Are they perhaps more children-oriented?
Yes.
Yes.
So, for me, Pixar begins and ends with Up. The rest of it I could do without. And
well, I find that a little harsh, but I understand where you're coming from.
Well, I mean, I'm fine with WALL-E.
I didn't think it was one of the great films of the year. And
I didn't care for Ratatouille.
I liked Ratatouille better than you did, and
right.
I didn't think it was great. I mean, Monsters, Inc. was charming once.
A lot of these
do not, for me anyway, have repeat value.
Right.
Up is the notable exception to that.
Right. So, we get, after Up, which came out last year, we get Toy Story 3, and it's a bit of a letdown for me, but it's, looking beyond that, it's entertaining. It goes on a bit too long. Most of the movie is climax. I fit in a tantric sex joke in my review. I don't know if it made it through or not.
I didn't edit it out.
Okay, well, that doesn't mean anything.
That's true.
So, and it's just the further adventures of these toys, and in a lot of ways it's the perfect way to wrap up these series of films, assuming they're wrapping them up. There's no guarantee of that.
It made $110 million over the weekend or something like that. I doubt seriously
yes.
They're going to wrap it up.
So, and on top of that, it's one of these movies where some of it's almost very poignant, except I didn't really care for the characters to begin with. So if you're someone who's deeply invested in Toy Story.
And I should probably translate for those people who do not know you that when Justin says a thing is deeply poignant, it means the rest of the audience is in tears.
Yes. Which the audience I saw it with was a kid behind me talking and then a small child running around. So I'm not sure.
It means most times the audience is in tears.
So, I could understand how, but you'd have to be really invested in these characters, which
you're not.
I'm not.
Okay.
So,
fair enough.
Opening this week, but
I've already seen it, yes. It was Mother and Child. Which is a film that surprised me. It's by a gentleman by the name of Rodrigo Garcia. And he apparently has a certain amount of following, though I'm not sure what for. But then most of his films are television. And so there's a real good chance that I've never seen any of them, although I have seen some episodes of Carnival, which he did. So it's possible that I've seen some episodes of Carnival. He directed some episodes, and so it's possible that I have seen something of his before. The IMDb claims that the film was executive produced by Alfonso Cuarón, Guillermo del Toro, and the Iñárritu gentleman whose first two names I keep forgetting. I think it's Alejandro González Iñárritu. The film itself only credits Iñárritu, and the other two are just relegated to thanks to category. But the Iñárritu connection is very strong. It's very much in the same mold as Amores Perros or 21 Grams or Babel, in that it is a whole bunch of stories, or in this case three stories, that don't appear to be interconnected necessarily, but ultimately are. And the only difference is that these characters tend to be more ultimately likable than characters in most of Iñárritu's films. So, speaking of having something invested in the characters, mm-hmm. you're more apt to have something invested in these characters. And it's really quite wonderful in many respects. You've got Annette Bening, who is extremely good in it. You've got Naomi Watts, who is very good in a difficult, well, they're both kind of difficult roles, because they spend a good deal of the film inviting you not to like them. And that's kind of tricky, to spend half the film keeping the audience at arm's length and then trying to make you warm towards them. And the second half, to do that in the space of 10 hours is pretty remarkable. The third story seems unrelated. It's the one that really seems unrelated, involving Kerry Washington. And she's trying to adopt a child. Annette Bening's character gave up a child when she was 14 years old, and Naomi Watts is that child. And she has issues from having been abandoned and then adopted into a not apparently very congenial situation. The real surprise in the film, however, probably, is a totally subdued performance from Samuel L. Jackson.
Right.
And that's
which he's done before.
Yeah, but it's just not something that you see every day. Right. I mean, you expect, you know, Samuel L. Jackson to be
Samuel Jackson.
Eyes clenched and fists blazing, or perhaps that's the other way around. And you know, it's a very subtle performance. Whether or not the film will catch on, it's the kind of film I can't tell whether it will or not. It should. I really hope people give this one a chance. And it opens on Friday.
Which, I guess, is this the big bomb of the year so far?
I would have to say that Jonah Hex is probably a disaster along at least Lusitania level.
Okay. Now, is it that bad?
It's not that bad. It's just that perfunctory.
Right.
It's got an okay premise, which maybe isn't spelled out as much as it might want to be. And the storyline is perfectly workable, but there's very little of it. So,
how long is this movie? I heard it's...
The movie, I think, if you include the credits, runs 81 minutes. So if you take off the credits, you're sitting there for about 71 minutes.
Right.
Which is pretty short these days. However, I wasn't sorry, because I went in the theater at 12:25. There were trailers, and then so that means the movie started sometime after 12:30. At 1:36, I checked what time it was. That's why I know it was 1:36. And my entire thought was, oh God, this cannot possibly go on for another 45, 50 minutes. Well, it didn't. 10 minutes later, I'm out of there. It's just, Josh Brolin is fine. John Malkovich is fine. The technical level is fine. When the film is in the supernatural realm, it's interesting. When it tries to be a Sergio Leone Western, it's not so interesting. Megan Fox... is Megan Fox.
We should just edit in a minute-long sigh after Megan Fox.
Yeah, people might take that the wrong way.
Oh, okay.
They, you know, might think that it's, you know, some sort of expression of how hot Megan Fox is, which I don't find, so...
Yeah, I can't imagine you getting all hot and bothered over Megan Fox.
No, neither can I. No. But the big thing that kills the film is I do not believe I have ever seen anything short of a Kevin Smith movie that was so indifferently directed. I expect to feel something when I see an entire town leveled. No, it just blows up. No big deal. Nothing is really made of it. There were people in it. We don't make any issue out of this. There will be explosions, and they'll be filmed pretty much from one angle. You'll see the explosion, and we just move on. There's no excitement to anything that happens.
Right.
It's just there. And which is more than can be said for most of the people that were supposed to be in the audience.
Right.
They were not there, and they were wise.
Well, we have a couple of...
Well,
Harry Brown's next week.
Yes, Harry Brown's next week.
We aren't going to talk about Harry Brown.
No, that's true.
Well, we have this week, which played at Action Fest.
Yeah.
And returning to the Carolina is The Good, the Bad, the Weird.
Which is, as it says it is, an Oriental Western. And it's like a Sergio Leone film, but it's actually funny. And it's clever.
And fun. Very stylish.
Extremely stylish. It was probably the most purely enjoyable film at Action Fest.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just... This is probably illegally levels of fun. I mean, this is not... This is just... This is like Once Upon a Time in the West filtered through Kung Fu Hustle. It's almost that ridiculous, I'd say.
Almost.
Not quite, but close. It's not quite on that level of cartoonish, but it is incredibly bizarre. I mean, it's...
And it's still very Asian.
Extremely. What you have is... I don't know if these people are really heroes, or if anybody's really the hero. Your main characters are Korean. For some reason, they're in Manchuria, and they have managed to anger both the Chinese bandits and the Japanese army. So they're just not in good, you know, they're not in good stead with anybody.
And everyone's after...
Everybody is after something.
Yes. Buried treasure.
Buried treasure, which is, turns out to be not at all what they think it is. I kind of figured out what it was.
Right.
Before...
Though it does lead to... It's pretty much everyone in the movie, including multiple armies chasing each other through the desert.
Yeah. It's exciting.
It's
fun. It's outrageous. If you're not in the market for something heavy like Mother and Child, this would be the film I think I would go for this week. I might go for it even
foreign
though I've seen it before.
Foreign films. Yeah, I kind of want to watch it.
Yeah.
And it's maybe a bit too long.
It's a little too long, but that seems like minor vetching at this, you know, and this is not... Too much about this is good to want to...
Right.
You know,
and I mean, it's not a perfect film, but it's...
No, but it is good.
It's fun,
and it's good filmmaking.
And it's nice to see coherent action scenes.
Yes, and if nothing else, it's not like anything else you're going to go see anytime soon.
So we have yet another Thursday Horror Picture Show.
Well, I hope so. I was planning on it.
I was going to be there.
Well, yeah, I think I'm bringing the film, actually. Okay. So,
and the film is?
Brian De Palma's Phantom of the Paradise.
Which is his first film.
No, it's not his first film.
Okay.
It's
mistaken.
Sisters definitely precedes it. And then there are those peculiar movies that nobody's ever seen.
Okay. I forget about Sisters.
But it's... I'm surprised by the number of people that tell me they haven't seen it. Which I guess is because, you know, back when I was even younger than Justin here, this was the midnight movie you went to see. This before Rocky Horror caught on.
You think that's part of the reason that it's not as widely seen?
I don't
Rocky
know.
Horror is?
As you said, the funny thing is that they're both horror parodies, and they're both rock musicals, and beyond that, they have almost nothing in common.
Right.
They're not stylistically similar, they're...
Well, how much of it do you think has to do with the fact that De Palma hasn't done anything like this? When you think of
I mean, when you think of De Palma now, you don't think of anything like Phantom of the Paradise, but then again, you don't think anything... like Carrie, and I think Carrie is still fairly well known.
That's true.
But, I mean, this is charming, because it's actually one of the most cynical films I can think of. But its cynicism is playful. It's not mean, really, but it's an odd film, because it's made in 1974, and in 1974, it has a lot of the stylistic qualities of 1960s film. And 1960s film, the aura of that era, really carries over for about one more year. And yet this is definitely a morning after film. This is like the hangover of the 60s. This has no illusions about the merits of music as some sort of curative. This is horribly cynical about music and the music business, but it is, as I say, it does it all in a playful manner. It's a lot of fun. Of course, it doesn't really have anybody in it that's a draw now either. That is another drawback. I mean, Paul Williams is your star, and the movies never quite could figure out what to do with funny-looking 5'2" Paul Williams, so... Roger Avery did figure out something wonderful to do with him in a guest bit in Rules of Attraction, something that was dreamed up for the movie, because the scene in question the character does not exist in the book.
Right.
So, you know, but I mean, he's Paul Williams, and this kind of, the evil swan is the role the man was born to play. The songs are catchy, they're fun, it makes sport of 50s nostalgia music, it makes sport of beach music, it makes sport of kind of a combination of glam rock and shock rock. Little side shots taken at folk rock, country, pap.
I mostly remember the
girl
the
group.
Beach. Yeah.
I'm talking about the thing where he's trying to decide, where Swan's trying to decide in what style to desecrate Winslow's music.
Okay.
It's no end cinematically playful. It's full of De Palma split screens, clever montages, clever scene transitions, subjective camera work, 360-degree tracking shots. You name it, it's in this film. Whether or not that's your dish of tea is, of course, another question. 90 minutes of hard sell comic musical horror may or may not be up your alley. It's certainly up mine.
Well, I'll be having next Tuesday
at 8:00 in the cinema lounge, as
yes,
we will be having Francis Ford Coppola's Tetro.
Which is the film that came out last year.
Yeah.
And I never got around to watching. It was out a couple weeks, wasn't it?
It was at least at the Fine Arts for 2 weeks. And I don't remember if it left specifically for not doing any business, or if it was one of those films that was put in there more or less as a stopgap for something that was coming out.
Right.
People tended to stay away from it, though. Coppola's batting record is uneven, to say the least. It stars Vincent Gallo, which is an invitation to people to not go to the movie. And the real surprise when people see it is that they're blown away by it. It is simply, as filmmaking, it's amazing. And Coppola has said that it's his most beautiful picture. And I wouldn't say he was wrong. Now, let me put into some kind of perspective here that I'm not a huge Coppola fan. I am one of the few people living that if you come to and ask them to name the top 10 movies of all time, no Godfather picture will be on that list. This has become... The Godfather pictures have become a worse cliche, I think, than Citizen Kane for people putting on their best movies of all time
right.
list.
Yeah.
And I've never been impressed.
But you're impressed with this.
I am way impressed with this. And the more I have lived with the film and thinking about the film, the more impressed I am with it.
Have you seen it since?
No.
Okay, so
no,
you're going to watch it this weekend?
Yes, I hope to. But I'm certainly going to see it this Tuesday.
Right.
So
me too.
If you miss the chance to see it, especially if you miss the chance to see it, on at least a sizable screen
right.
and with an audience, which is the way most things should be seen, here's one opportunity to do so. So take it.
And it's free.
And it's free, yes. So.
So this week, starting tomorrow, which will theoretically be when this podcast is up, maybe some point in the past when somebody listens to this.
The theory, yes. They will not know when tomorrow is, yes.
Who does?
Tomorrow never knows.
But opening on Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
The 23rd of June.
Yes.
Is Night and Day, the new... Tommy Cruise. I'm going to start calling him Tommy.
Tommy, I didn't realize you were that intimate with him. So
he seems like he needs a nickname.
Oh, okay.
He's a man in dire need of a nickname.
I thought you and he were like this, and you could tell us the truth.
Maybe I'm going to pay off my student loans. Start calling him.
Oh, that's possible.
Tommy.
Yeah.
This is part of my plan. Get out of debt. But Night and Day opens.
Night and Day opens.
Tom Cruise.
And Cameron Diaz.
Yes.
And it's probably fine. It looks like elaborate, generic thrill comedy.
It's probably...
I'm sure it's better than Killers.
Lots of things are better than Killers. The Gout is better than Killers.
Marmaduke isn't.
You didn't see... Killers.
Sight unseen, I guarantee you, Marmaduke is not better than Killers.
Okay.
It might be shorter.
Okay. Nevertheless, that's the big release.
That's the big release this week, and then at the end of the week, my friend here gets to go see the new Adam Sandler picture.
Yes. Which?
Grown Ups.
Which, it's less I'm worried about Adam Sandler, more Rob Schneider and David Spade. That's...
They really do. There needs to be a special billing. You know, Adam Sandler, Selma Hayek, but Rob Schneider and David Spade.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Selma Hayek. Does she need a paycheck?
I don't know. What is she in this movie for? I cannot imagine.
And I always feel like there's part of me that feels like Chris Rock is somehow respectable, but I guess he's just been...
But he is in this movie.
Right.
So... His respectability is sort of on the shaky side right now, so it's just not...
Kevin James is a non-factor.
Yeah, well, Kevin James, you know, he was in that other Adam Sandler film, which was also directed by the same person.
Well, glad he's looking out for his friends.
Yeah, well, it keeps him off welfare, you know? I mean, I guess there's something to be said for that.
Yeah.
But... I'm not looking forward to it, and with any luck, I won't have to look forward to it, because...
I can say I am also not looking forward to it.
That's true.
If that makes you feel any better.
It makes me feel no different. I wish I could somehow spare you, but I can't spare you and spare myself at the same time. And
right.
Well,
makes sense.
Yeah.
What is the? Oh, they grew up friends. The premise of Grown Ups is they grew up as friends.
And then their baseball basketball, softball, badminton coach dies, and they all decide that they need to get together over the 4th of July and connect deeply.
Probably
it's kind of like The Big Lie with the Big Chill with fart jokes. That's my guess.
Getting hit in the nuts.
Yeah. And peeing in the pool. That gag is played up heavily in the trailer. So for people who think that peeing in the pool is the ne plus ultra of comedic endeavor, this is your movie. Solitary Man is a movie that sneaked up on us. The reviews on this film are incredibly good. It stars Michael Douglas as a minor league celebrity based on the fact that he used to do used car ads. And he apparently is charming and completely worthless as a human being. He has an alienated wife, played by Susan Sarandon. He has a girlfriend, played by Mary Louise Parker, who has a daughter. This cannot end well. Apparently the only really decent character that is in the film that relates to him is Danny DeVito as an old friend of his who sticks by him and is seemingly a nice guy. The film has got like an 83% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. The reviews have been that nobody plays a slimy character as well as Michael Douglas, and they're lucky because Michael Douglas is playing the slimy character. So I'm at least curious about it, even if it did kind of slip in under the wire. It was not expected to open this week, and now all of a sudden here it is.
And well, once again,
I remain Ken Hanke, irredeemably. I am Ken Hanke, and
I remain Justin Souther.
No one else has claimed it.
No, but I did Facebook searches. There's other Justin Southers out there, which is really bizarre.
It is.
Yeah, there's multiples.
Multiples.
Yes,
wow.
I'm going to assume I'm the most famous though, because I'm on iTunes.
That's
you know
true.
Who's not on iTunes?
Who?
The Beatles.
Well, that's, I'm sure that's a...
I know, but we don't
deliberate
tell,
thing.
We don't tell,
yeah,
tell people
we're
that.
We're more famous than the Beatles.
Yes.
Wow. Let's see, if the Beatles are bigger than God, and we're bigger than the Beatles...
they're bigger than Jesus.
Than Jesus, okay. Yes. Yeah, the Ruddles who were bigger than God.
Okay.
Okay, if the Jesus... if the Beatles are bigger than Jesus, and we're bigger than the Beatles, what does that make us?
Elitist bastards.
That's right. I should have known that. But it does make us elitist bastards. And once again, we've been to the movies, and this is our take on this week.
Brought to everyone, including us, by the Mountain Express.
By the Mountain Express.
The fine folks.
Yes.
The Mountain Express.
And produced, or cohered, as they say, by Mr. Mucilage himself, Steve Schanefeld.
I guess that's what we have.
I guess that's us for this week.
Okay.
So, I guess we'll be back next week with more Monkey Shines.
Yes.